Hey everyone, it's Benji here. I just want to let you guys know that the Budget Overland podcast is no more. Ended that back in February 2024. I just wanted to come on here and give you guys a disclaimer as to not buy anything from Budget Overland Official. The only two things that you should be able to join is the Facebook group, and that is under groups, and it's called Budget Overland. You have to ask to join. It's still up and operational. And then budgetoverlandportal.com will still be up and operational until the domain name runs out, which I believe is good till 2026. Anything, everything else that's Budget Overland out there, please don't support. Please don't buy. It's either spam, scam, or something else. Just want to let you guys know, I did start a new podcast called Newfound Overland. It's available on all major platforms. Love to have you over there. Just kind of disclaimer here, guys, up front before you get into today's episode. There's a lot of gold out here. You know, every episode we had some good guests and good topics. So I don't want to discourage you guys from listening further, so please do, and I'd love to see you over on Newfound Overland. Bye-bye. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Budget Overland Podcast. I'm your host, Benji, and tonight, in-house, sort of, kind of, we're in the same continent. So, Sean, with the story till now, how the heck are you, brother?
I am doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on. And what's funny is, like, I was kind of wanting you on for a minute there. And then Captain Colin there from Overlanding Overland, he's been on the show a couple times. And he's like, man, you should reach out to Sean and have him on. And that was a couple months ago. I was like, man, I'd love to. But right now with Christmas coming up and everything, everyone's scheduling conflicts, it might not work out. So, yeah, here we are.
Here we are.
2024. Man, you got a busy year coming up?
Probably. They're all busy most of the time. I don't really plan that far ahead. It's more like,
oh, nice.
I kind of plan what I'm doing the week before most of the time, so it's more like busy being busy and then just kind of flying by the seat of my pants as to what's coming next.
Nice. That's kind of my style too. Anything like weather related wise in your guys' part of the woods, like as of today, that's relevant? You guys getting a lot of snow right now, or is it mostly wet?
It's been cold. We've been having like this terrible, terrible cold. It was minus 14 Celsius at my house.
Sheesh.
A couple of days ago, and tonight we're supposed to get about a foot of snow. So I haven't even been able to go out. It's just been so cold out that up in the mountains, it's like minus, I think where we were planning to go on our last trip, it was going to be minus 34 or something at night, which I think is where Celsius and Fahrenheit meet.
Wow.
It's just
right.
Ridiculously cold. I don't think diesel heaters and tents are even going to keep up with that. And then if your truck doesn't start in the morning, that's like, you could die. So we just haven't even gotten out this year. It's been too cold.
Yeah. Too cold. So how do you like the camping in the colder weathers, or do you like it in the summertime? What's your favorite season per se, even though there's not really a season for camping?
Yeah,
what's your ideal time?
I like them both for different reasons, but I'm definitely more of a summer person just because I like enjoying being outside, not just tolerating it. I enjoy making videos in the winter more because the snow makes everything so beautiful, and it's just it's an automatic challenge built into the whole thing. So those videos are I really enjoy making those, but as far as just camping enjoyment, I enjoy the summer for sure.
Nice. Have you ever, like, I used to be a big summertime guy, you know, not so much for camping, maybe, you know, occasional camping, but primarily, like, you know, for us down here in Missouri, we go floating a lot, kayaking, all that fun stuff, a lot of water recreation. And then it seems like the last couple of years, my whole idea of that has shifted, you know, because it's, I could put up with the heat and humidity as long as I've got water, but it's kind of opposite whenever you're freezing cold, but yet you're more and less likely to be in a vehicle all day when you're out driving around anyway, so you'll have the heat. But like the diesel heaters opened up 6 months for us. I mean, have you seen a huge increase? I hate talking about diesel heaters because everybody always talks about diesel heaters in every group, but have they been game changers for you guys?
It has, as far as the winter camping, and even fall and sometimes in the summer, because we're at such high elevations, it makes it feel like you're at home when you're in your tent. Cause I have mine piped right into my floor. So it's like a little furnace vent, like you'd have in your floor at home. But, you know, like being able to having it snowing outside and you're sitting in there in your t-shirt and you're warm and you don't have to be like bundled up in your sleeping bag to just to not be freezing is right. Makes it way more tolerable. Before I had a diesel heater, I would without question be going south to camp in the winter just to get out of the cold temperatures. And now I'm able to comfortably do it for the most part. So I enjoy it a lot more. Yes, to answer your question, it's been a game changer.
Game changer. I know we're in kind of different parts of the world, you know, but everybody says the same thing. Diesel heaters are game changers. And then we got our Facebook group going and we put a rule up like no more diesel heater talk. Cause it's the same redundancy, you know, it's like, join the Chinese diesel heater groups, you know?
Yeah. It's always everyone's sick of seeing diesel heater reviews and stuff on YouTube.
Someone was like, that was so 2022, which, you know, around that time it was like, oh, this is killer. You know, they're affordable. You know, it's like there's four more seasons of camping.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it does change it in such a significant way that you can camp more of the year that I think it's become like one of those essential pieces of kit to have if you do this a lot. Right. But yeah, I'm sick of hearing about them too.
let's end it right now. We might just delete this whole segment. I don't know. No, but in all seriousness. So let's go. I'm going to be all over the place with you because we only got about an hour and you've got all sorts of content and cool stuff you've done over the last 3 or 4 years, even prior to that. But let's go back to the basics, kind of the beginning, the genesis. Maybe some of your close friends might know about you, but not a whole lot of people. Share as much or little as you want, but what kind of got you into this off-roading and then style camping? We won't go into like definitions of overlanding or anything like that. I'm kind of tired of that too, but just outdoor vehicle recreate and camp and explore, like take us back to like when you start, you know, got that itch.
I've loved camping since I was a little kid. So I would go camping with my parents. We had a tent trailer and we'd go, you know, a few times every summer. And then when I got older, I just started going by myself. And then I started venturing out further within, you know, forestry roads and stuff, going to more remote campsites. And I was just trashing my car. I was one of those guys driving a car on the dirt road, you know? And my buddy said to me, he's like, you know, you should just go on Craigslist and get like $1,000 Ford Explorer or something. Yeah. So that's like your camping vehicle. And so like $2,500 later, I had a XJ Cherokee that had like, I don't know, 2-inch lift.
Those things are freaking bulletproof, man. You can't kill them. They're like a Toyota 4Runner. I mean,
the motors are. The Jeeps themselves fall apart.
All right. Well, let's talk about that because they're a unibody. And I don't know what kind of weather, like, do you guys salt the roads? I don't know, like, the rust issue up there. I know down here we're kind of on that rust belt line where you've got to check. You're either going to get a dry one or a super roached out one. But for the most part, they're pretty much bulletproof rust, down here.
Wasn't rust for me. It was just that it was old, you know? I would go out with it. And of course, as soon as I got the thing, I moved on from just camping. And I was like, what else can I do with this? And I started, I joined a local off-road club and I started doing some trails. And I was like, oh, this is great. I was just hooked immediately. And that was just it for me. But it got to a point where I'd go out and I would break something literally every time, you know, a U-joint or, you know, I don't know, the steering or something would break every single time I'd go out, to the point where, and I'm working a full-time job at this point. So I'm going out on the weekend, I'm off-roading, I'm breaking my Jeep, I'm going to work, I'm coming home every night after work. I'm in the driveway in the cold, like fixing whatever I broke on this thing, or I'm going to a buddy's house and we're fixing this thing. I'm spending more time fixing it than I am driving it.
But I think a lot of people can relate to that. It's like, why am I doing this?
That's also how you learn how vehicles work.
100%.
And I'm glad I went through all that, because now I have a vehicle that's in such, you know, that's maintained so well and is fairly new that I don't really break much stuff anymore unless I'm really hard on it. But if I hadn't, I like that I know, you know, how to fix all the basic stuff that I've learned how to fix on my XJ back in the day, so that I understand how the vehicle functions for the most part.
That is valuable advice right there. If anything, you know, it's kind of like, are you going to go to college? Are you going to go to trade school? You know, either way, you're going to learn eventually. But I think it's funny. You hit a lot of good points there, man. So it's like a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people can't even do like a bush fix to get off a trail. Like I don't, it's very common down here in America. You know, a lot of people can't even change a flat tire, spare tire. But
yeah,
I
mean, that should be like, I mean, number one, I think you should have to know how to change a spare tire to even get a driver's license. But
absolutely. But
I mean, that's,
it blows my mind though. And then you guys are pretty remote and a lot of people down here, you know, with overlanding, you've got to go through a bunch of different states to get to BLM land or certain destinations. You know, pretty much everywhere west of me is pretty vast and open for the most part, you know. But anywhere east is very heavily populated, and it gets a little bit challenging for a lot of people to make trips. So a lot of people are going up, you know, to Canada and stuff, BC area, and even like to the Upper Peninsula, Michigan, all those places, or they're going west. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know, like, if the draw is just open vastness or not. What do you guys have areas up in your parts of the woods that are hard to find or private property and stuff like that? Or do you guys have readily available camping spots?
Pretty readily available. I forget what the exact percentage is, but I think it's something like 80% or more of British Columbia is public land. So, and most of that is mountainous. So the main export of British Columbia is lumber, right? So there's just forestry roads everywhere to explore. You could explore forever. And I've seen a pretty good chunk of it over the last few years.
Does it get, it will get in kind of your YouTube and videoing and all that, but does it ever get kind of routine? You don't get bored with kind of exploring the same area, or like for me in my area, we'll explore the same area, but then we'll keep venturing off into areas we're very curious about. You know, if we're looking at a map or something, it's like, oh, this, you know, could potentially be a blocked road. No one's been down it forever. You know, it's still a legal trail. Do you guys, I'm sure you do the same kind of thing, but do you always wish like, man, I wish I was like in America or something, or do you just, cause your beauty and area of British Columbia is like super, you know, like down where we're at near Kansas, Oklahoma, it's like, oh, this is boring. But I mean, I guess if you get, I'm asking if you're getting, I don't know what I'm asking. Does it get redundant doing these trips in the same spot over and over kind of? Because you're not in the same spot. It's so vast. It's hard for a lot of people to grasp that.
There's so many places to go here that, I mean, you can go to a whole bunch of spots 1 year and then go to a whole completely different set of spots for a whole other year before you need to like go back to somewhere you've already been if you want, right? So, I mean, for me, I really enjoy the exploring part of it. I like going places I haven't been and finding new stuff, and that's like an adventure to me, right? So I definitely don't like to go back to places that I've already been, at least not soon after I've been there. Like I'll try to wait a year or two before I go back somewhere. And even then, if I have the choice of going back somewhere or going somewhere new, I'm going to choose somewhere new every day of the week, unless it's somewhere that I loved it so much that I feel like a desire to go back. And there's a few places like that that we've gone to. The other side of that is sometimes in the winter, because our destinations are so limited because of the snow, and like, you're probably not familiar with the geography of British Columbia, but I live in what's called the Fraser Valley, and it's a big valley surrounded by mountains. And to go anywhere, you have to go out and over one of three mountain passes that are pretty high elevation and pretty treacherous in the winter with snow and ice and stuff. So we kind of get a little bit trapped here in the winter, unless you're willing to brave that, which I do sometimes, but pretty much anywhere past there, you're going to go anyway, it's going to be covered in snow. So
dang, man, have you ever been like snowed out from coming back in?
I haven't, but I've gone through some blizzards on some mountain passes that have been a little sketchy for sure. You just never know up there. The weather changes so fast that you can get caught in something, and then that's it. you're there. You got no choice.
So I think, like, I was going to ask you about popularity within the trails, but we'll come back to that. But do you feel like for a lot of people visiting the area, they should tackle that kind of stuff, or just leave it up to the locals? Do they even care? Are there any recommendations? Like, you can't go, like, I don't know how your laws are up there. Do they close down roads? Like, you cannot access this stuff. No. You're on your own.
No, it's very different from what you'll see in the US and a lot of places where they'll close trails in the winter. Mm-hmm. It's all public land here. It's all open all year round. Nothing is closed seasonally. You're just at your own risk. And for the most part, if it's super dangerous, you're not going to be able to get there anyway.
Right.
Because it's going to be too high elevation. There's going to be too much snow or whatever it may be. I don't know. Whatever your comfort level is.
All right. I'm all over the place because I'm trying to get as much as possible in this thing. So I'm asking all sorts of stupid questions that hopefully aren't the same kind of questions you're always asked. So I always try to think of something different. And that's sometimes hard. So what I was going to go back to is do you guys see a surplus in this overland off-road lifestyle, or is it kind of always been there and we're just calling it something else? Or have you seen like an increase of vehicle recreational campers in your area?
There's definitely been an increase, and that's in line with probably everywhere with the growing popularity of overlanding as a hobby. But here locally, at least, off-roading has been kind of part of the culture for a long time. There's a few places that are kind of off-road meccas, right, in North America, like you get Moab and probably, California. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, like, kind of the area I'm in BC is also kind of like an off-roading mecca, although not as famous, it's just kind of part of the lifestyle here. Like, that's just...
That makes sense, though, because there's probably not a lot of stuff to do if you're in remote areas anyway. I mean, I don't know the size of your guys' population in your town or anything. I'm sure you've got stuff to do.
We're only an hour east of Vancouver, which is a major city, so, it's fairly well-populated. But it's just the environment and the terrain is so suited for it, right? Like, what else would you want to do but like drive a truck around in the forest and have fun, right? I don't know. That's how I see it.
I 100% agree. I think it's probably in our DNA also as explorers and, watching people do fun stuff with their vehicles. Sure. But going
some
backwards.
Get it too.
Huh?
Some people don't get it too. They're like, "What?" I get comments all the time on YouTube and they're like, what exactly is fun about this? This looks like you have a miserable time. Like, everything's going wrong. The road is like difficult, I'm like, that's exactly why we like it.
Yeah, for sure. You push yourself. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Going back to when you started YouTube and what in the heck were your expectations or anything? If you want to go down that rabbit hole, we can briefly if you want.
I had absolutely no expectations whatsoever. I've always been into making videos, fun little videos with my friends or just filming like stuff that we're going out and doing, just goofing around. And I wanted a place to practice just to make stuff and just kind of get better at it. And I didn't even know what it was going to be about. That's why it's called The Story Till Now. It's just like this story until right now. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's my story. I was just filming what I was doing. The first video on my channel is my wife and I's honeymoon to China. It's
crazy.
Nothing to do with off-roading at all. It just kind of, that's what I was doing a lot of. And so that kind of became the thing.
That organically happened. It's okay to use.
It organically happened.
It.
Yeah.
So, we could spider web off this as many different ways as we want to. So as far as like back, let's say COVID era, there's a lot of content creators were kind of putting out cool stuff, and it just, I would say there was a handful at the time of YouTubers that did kind of the overland scene. Fast forwarded a year, you've probably quadrupled that, if not more, people. And then now you're adding Instagrammers and all the other media outlets or whatever, the social media outlets.
And now
do you feel
ridiculous.
It is insanely, and this is where we could branch off again to where it's like super colluded. There's a lot of big businesses that just want to come in and capitalize on it. You got the real authentic people out there doing it. And I don't want to turn this into a rant and raise episode or anything, but do you see an issue? Obviously, yeah, because you're like, oh yeah, there's a lot more influencers. I know you're gonna love that name, influencers out there. How does Sean respond to all this craziness? Do you give a crap? Do you even care?
No, I think it's great. I think as long as people are having fun doing what they want to do, yeah. and if they want to make videos and put them on the internet, then cool. I think it just goes to show that there's something to, you know, what we're doing. People mm-hmm. want to see it. Like the amount of these channels that have blown up is not insignificant. So there's obviously an right. audience for it. So I think, you know, it's like, I don't feel any type of negative way about it. I think it's, I've met a lot of my good friends, you know, as people who are also making off-roading videos on the internet. So I think it's great. Yeah. But yeah, when I started, one of the, you know, when it started to do, you know, I noticed like I was starting to get views on my channel and it wasn't just my buddies commenting. I was like, you know, there's not really anyone else doing this. This could be like a lane here for me to make something that works. Right. Cause there was, right. There's like Expedition Overland. There's Dirt Every Day. I'm just saying like the stuff that I would watch on YouTube that was kind of similar. Right. And there's, I don't know. There's a couple others, I think, but like there wasn't many. And I remember specifically like going on a deep dive search. I'm like, nobody is doing this kind of like the way that I see it is, you know, which was kind of like more raw, like exploring and like just a few buddies going out and going on adventures and with their trucks and that kind of stuff. And that's what we did.
I think it's really, and this is what got me hooked on this whole overlanding thing, was going wheeling and camping with my buddies. And, you know, if you're recording with a huge $2,500, $3,500 camera and a $2,500 lens and all that, or if you're just shooting with an iPhone and like a $200 drone, like out of the like six, right. Yeah. Who needs that? It helps.
One of these.
It's the secret sauce. It's the secret sauce that everyone's denying that you don't need that. No, dude. But that's what's funny also is like people see your stuff and you're, and I don't know if you put in your description on YouTube, like what gear you use or anything like that. So I think a lot of people, I've seen content creators where they put like what lenses and gear and gimbals, whatever. And then people go out and buy that stuff. It's kind of like overlanding. They'll go out and outkit their rig because it works for Johnny, but it doesn't work for you, which is also kind of funny. Yeah. But
well, I used to do that, and I still get a lot of questions all the time. The number one question I'll get all the time from people is like, "What drone are you using?" And I used to just share all that, but I don't want it to be about the gear that I use to make it. Right. Really, it's not. That's like I'm not a how-to channel, right? And there's also there's this kind of mindset that people get into where they think they can just go buy the same camera or the same drone that I use and they're going to get the same results. And that's not the reality at all. Like there's actually skill. Surprisingly, there's actually some skill involved in using the equipment. And I mean, I could probably go out and film a whole episode on my phone and it would still be entertaining for people who like the kind of content I make, because it's not really about the camera or the lens or whatever. It's about how you frame the shots and the storytelling and the editing and all the little things that go into it. So like when people are like, oh, like what drone do you have? I'm just like, well, it doesn't really matter. They're all good. You can just go out and get whatever drone you want.
Right. Those, I mean, but they do enhance. I mean, you're not saying that they don't, but I agree with you 100%.
Improvements or whatever,
but that's like with anything, you know. It's like, because I play guitar and I always use this reference for Budget Overland. It's like you could play a $200 guitar and be the best guitarist in the world, it's gonna sound pretty good. But if you go up to like a $5,000-$6,000 guitar and you're a good guitarist, excellent guitarist, it's gonna sound phenomenal. It just depends on the quality you're after.
$6,000 guitar and you suck,
you're gonna suck even more.
Suck. The guitar is not going to make you a good
guitar. That's good too. It goes both ways.
Make. Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, moving on in this, the probably the weirdest interview you've ever been in, which is cool, I guess.
That's great.
Sweet. So I kind of wrote just down a few little things to kind of go off of, but sometimes do you ever feel limited in your content that you're creating? Do you ever feel like, and this doesn't have to go as far as like that day you were off or whatever, you know, it's like, do you feel like, oh, it's a, I've got to go put out a video, you know, I've got 5 days to get a video for, you know, Monday, you know, do you sure. ever doubt yourself or just like beat yourself up? Like, man, I got to go to work, you know?
Not so much that I got to go to work. Sometimes I'll be hard on myself for doing that, just for being like, oh, I got to make a video, when sometimes like, I don't want to put out videos that I don't think are like the best possible thing mm-hmm. that I could be making. Like, I don't want to go out and make something that sucks just because, you know, I have to have a video this week. But I mean, I've gotten to a point where I'm fairly good at just being able to make something that's good. But I've also hit a point where I'm like very, I'm trying to be very meticulous about only making stuff that I want to make and not, and not doing it just to put out a video, which, you know, early on is when I first started doing this as my full-time job, it was like, there was a lot of pressure there because, you know, if you skip a week, that's like a week of unpaid time off from your job. Right. Yeah. So, I, you know, with the expenses to run the channel and the payments on the Gladiator and whatever else, you know, it was, I couldn't afford to not put out a video
right.
1 week. So, I mean, now I'm at a much better point where, you know, if I miss a week, it's not like I'm not going to default on my loans or anything.
So, well, we gave it our all, so, honey. So it's like,
yeah, I missed a week. We're going bankrupt.
Captain yeah. Colin shows up and he's taking your Gladiator.
Oh, man, that would be the worst. You have to be Captain Colin, right?
Inside job.
So embarrassing.
Do you ever like, and I know like you just put tracks on your Gladiator. Let's talk about your Gladiator. This is the most insane Gladiator probably Thanks. Out in existence that I'm aware of. So. Do you want to go through so. Kind sure of the quick crazier. Specs?
I'm sure there's crazier ones out there, but I don't think there's more well-known ones.
Well-known. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Some people have some nice stuff in their barns. They just don't ever want to share it or show it off. You know, I get that.
There's a lot of like crazy rock crawler Gladiators out there on like massive tires and, you know, bob beds. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like it.
You're a dude. So it's like, yeah, I want horsepower. Yeah. I want some massive tracks for my 1-ton axles or whatever. So.
Yeah. Okay. So basic specs, it's got, Dana 60 front and rear axles, running 40 inch tires. It's got a 426 Hemi, swap, which, puts out 600 horsepower, 500 pound feet of torque. You know, just because that's necessary, right?
why not?
It's got a Go Fast camper on the back, for camping, which I love. What else? That's the basics, I guess.
Yeah, that covered quite a bit. That's more than far from stock, as they would say.
5-inch suspension lift, Terraflex suspension, Falcon 3.3 adjustable shocks. Well, I said 40-inch tires, but right now it doesn't have tires on it. It's got tracks on it. So
are you going to ever put like portals on it? Have you ever heard of that for like the axle portals?
Yeah, I mean, they're very expensive. I don't see the benefit, really.
But
I mean, they're cool. I mean, if they weren't like $40,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is, like as much as a Jeep, then maybe
that's
I would
crazy,
consider it. But
man.
I already have really nice axles, so
I mean, for sure.
My Jeep's pretty dialed in as it is right now. I don't think it really needs any upgrades.
I'm just thinking for future content for you, man. I mean, if someone wants to reach out to you, give you a set of portals or something.
I mean, hey, if somebody wants to give you some portals, heck yeah, let's go.
Yeah, okay, let's go.
Why not, right? But, that's not going to happen, I don't think.
Well, who knows, man?
Who knows?
What? I never did find out. What happened to your first Gladiator? Or is this the same one? This is not the same one.
No. The first one, we blew up the engine.
Okay.
And bent the frame.
Oh.
And, it was done. So
I must have missed that video. What? How far long ago was that? A couple years ago?
Yeah.
Dang near now.
Probably a year and a half or so ago, we got the new Gladiator. There was a lot of things that went wrong. We supercharged it, and I can't get into that too much, but it didn't really work out.
And we'll just blur this part out. You can talk about it. We'll just blur it out.
And the frame, I think the frame was a little bit bent from just a few crazy things that we did. And anyway, long story short, the opportunity came up to do a Hemi swap, and we decided it would be better to do it in a brand new Gladiator than in one that was beat to crap, and and apply all the things that I'd learned from that build into making kind of my dream build. And I was lucky enough to have a good opportunity to do that because of all my partners I work with. So
that's awesome, man.
And I to be clear, I paid for my Hemi swap. It wasn't given to me or anything like that. It cost a lot of money.
Talking about driving around aimlessly in British Columbia, what's some of your favorite trips you've taken? And I know you've been on a lot. And it could be, I guess, international, since you've been down here a few times. You went to Baja, didn't you? Or are you planning on Baja?
No, I haven't been to Baja yet.
Isn't that on your radar?
I've been invited on a couple of trips, but it's such a long drive to get down there. It's
crazy, man.
The time commitment is a lot. And I don't know. I mean, I was going to go with Marco, Overland X. He asked me to go down with him, and then there was some stuff going down in Baja, and it wasn't safe to go, and we didn't go. And, I don't know. Like, I don't have a whole lot of, like, it looks beautiful, but I don't have a whole lot of desire to make that long of a journey and go
down. What is that, like a 4-day drive, you think, from where you're at, maybe, if you're just hoofing it?
I mean, yeah, I think so. About 4 days just to get to the border, and then however long you're driving around Baja, and then that drive all the way back up again.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm driving around, you know, a Gladiator worth about $250,000, which is a nice target. For
you'll have to get it wrapped in like something that looks all rusty and crusty.
I mean, maybe I'll go sometime. I don't have a whole lot of desire to do that trip. There's just it's just too much.
No, you might as well just hit up a bunch of cool stuff on the West Coast and then go back over Central United States.
Yeah, and I really just enjoy so much the environment that we have here in British Columbia that more than anything else, I like just doing stuff around here and exploring here and further north. I think I'm going to be going up north sometime this year, do some stuff up that way, maybe go up to Alaska, the Yukon, places like that.
Nice.
So, I have no idea what's up there as far as trails or off-roading or anything, but it'll be adventure, exploring.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say some of your favorite trips over the years, but another thing is, like, a lot of people do envy the Rocky Mountains, the whole, you know, all that fun switchback roads, all that. We all envy that because we don't have all that, primarily unless you're in Colorado or if you're up north or, you know, California and all that stuff.
Colorado looks very similar to British Columbia, but I haven't been there, but from what I've seen from pictures and videos and stuff, the trails in Colorado seem to be like fairly maintained or like smooth or whereas you come up to the Rockies here and you're literally on crumbling old roads that no one's driven on in years you're actually out there exploring stuff, which is what I love. I find And there, don't get me wrong, there's some beautiful trails and places in the United States. But I find when I go down there, a lot of the trails or roads or we end up on, it's all very maintained. And there's like signage and trail names. And it just it feels a lot less wild, which is,
right.
I think, is just part of what I it's just what I like to do. And part of what is appealing to people about my adventures, I think.
I think a lot of it. Stateside is because it's so popular right now. I think if you went back 5 years ago, they probably would have seen kind of like rough trails, but like Colorado, man, like Ouray and all that stuff, they're packed all the time. You know, that's
yeah, well, everyone's that's out one of those, there like off road meccas, right?
Yeah, like, destinations. Yeah. And the only bad thing about it for me is we got to drive through Kansas. But outside of that, man, Kansas.
Yeah. Well, I love going down to Moab as well. Like I love that Moab just feels like it feels like this off-road town. You go there and it feels like a home away from home, and there's, you know, there's all these Jeeps everywhere rolling down the street and you can go do all these fun trails and everything, but it's a completely different kind of off-roading.
Yeah,
it's not the same.
It's funny, like, because I'll have people on here that are, you know, world travelers or international travelers and stuff, but I always ask them, you know, like, what's it like driving through South America or transporting your vehicle across the, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, whatever. And it's just their idea of adventure is different than mine. And a lot of people's, and I think it's great that everybody's got different ideas, you know, just like the comments people make, like, why are you putting yourself through that misery? You know, it's, I love that we're all different. So
there's going no back to it,
but like for a lot of us stateside, that Wild West feeling or exploration of trying to find stuff, you know, it's like, even though it's been in someone's GPX file for 10 years, you know, it still feels fresh. Like, oh, we just discovered this, but I don't know. I guess we could all relate on that. The exploration part,
I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I wrote down a few things, but I'm just kind of all over the place. Is there anything you want to kind of touch on kind of random at random?
Why don't you tell me about yourself? What do you like?
No one wants to hear that. Bull.
Come on, I want
long
to know.
Walks on the beach.
Oh, okay.
I don't go out after 10 o'clock on weeknights. No, man, I'm just a dude.
Where are some places that you've gone on trips?
Nothing too crazy, man. I'm down here in kind of south central Missouri, like the Ozarks. You know Matt McClellan down in Arkansas.
Yeah, I do.
Kind of. That's where I go. I go down to Arkansas, primarily southwest Missouri. We've been to Colorado a few times, but man, it is a drive. It's a commitment. You know, from my house to Colorado is 19 hours, you know, to pass Denver or at least to Denver is like 19 hours. And I can only take off work, you know, 5 days max, you know, before things start getting out of control. So it's all about trying to find that balance, but. For Arkansas, most of our stuff, we do a lot of weekend trips. Yeah.
Yeah. Arkansas is one of my bucket list places to go, but it's another one of those ones where it's like, it's a 3 day drive just to get there. But I really want to go down there and go out on some stuff with Matt and Kara. I think it'd be,
it's a lot of fun. And I think it's super overlooked by a lot of people. And I feel like for not me, because it is incredible, man, because you could be in like clay, like not mud, but clay, and then you could be on like the shelf trails, you know, the shelf rock and all that stuff, ledges, and then you're just going through water crossings left and right. It's just, it's insane, and the scenic, like, views everywhere, like on the trail and stuff, it's just, we take it for granted for sure, you know, in our area, and for me, it's about a four-hour drive to get down to some decent areas. In Arkansas. So it's not bad. You know, it's a fun weekend spot or short trips, I guess. What's something that you're looking forward to in 24? Anything particular? I know you don't plan out too far ahead, but is there a couple of things that are kind of exciting?
Like I said, planning on doing some stuff up north, hopefully. Planning out a couple of trips to do some old wagon roads and stuff that are,
oh, nice.
Some really remote type stuff. Which is my favorite. So, like kind of way up north, as well. And, looking forward to that. But, mostly I don't have any concrete plans, just kind of broad strokes ideas and things usually just kind of pop up throughout the year. People have ideas for stuff to do or yeah.
Cool. I like that. You're not, it seems like you're pretty relaxed and chill with your schedule. And I like that.
Yeah.
That's healthy.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes healthy. It's stressful.
Well, yeah. Cause you're your own boss. I mean, if you want to be lazy sometimes, it's like, crap, you know, bite you in the butt or if you overdo stuff, you don't want to.
It's like, I don't ever get lazy. Like where I'm like, oh, I don't want to go out and go on an adventure and make a video. It's like, I love, like, a lot of people don't realize, but, like I was saying, I've always been really into making movies, and I'm probably even more into making movies than I am into off-roading. So it's like, it's kind of a perfect mix for me. But a lot of people think that, you know, because I do YouTube, like making videos is like taking over my hobby of off-roading, but it's actually like more the other way around where, you know, I enjoy both of these things where my primary goal almost is to make cool videos.
Really? And
then, yeah. That's really what I love more than anything.
So like storylines and everything, movies or cinematic?
I mean, just my YouTube videos. Like I always just wanted to make movies. So this was just my way, like the closest I could get to making movies was taking making it into as close as I can get to a movie. And that's why
I'm
always
it.
Trying to increase the production value. And I'm obsessed with quality. And I think that's, why I've been able to kind of set myself apart a little bit there.
I think so too, man. I think, and I'm not trying to kiss your butt or anything, but I think this is where I'm going to sound all cheesy. You're an inspiration, man. You're an inspiration. No, but seriously, there's a few friends of mine that they're into that cinematic stuff and they've got the ability to do it and they'll go out and now they've got, you know, decent sized YouTube channels doing what they love. It's kind of like you. And it's like me, I love doing little videos too, but it's like, it's primarily just for me. I say that, you know, and it's fun to put the music together. Or if a buddy texts you some of their video of their drone shots and you can incorporate it, and you're like, oh yeah, cool. And you know, I'm a YouTuber now cause I got a drone, but I think it's fun. I can get that.
It is
creative
fun.
Side. So planning trips with your buddies and stuff. Do you have like, you guys like in a club, off-road club up there? Or do you just text people and say, hey, I'm going camping next week and you want to join? How does that look like for you? For me, we kind of plan in advance, you know, at least a month or two in advance.
Yeah, it's usually, I've got my group of friends that you've probably seen in my videos. It's always, you know, one or two of the same group of like six or seven guys. It's whoever's available or whoever's like, whoever wants to go on that particular trip, or I'll just be like, I want to go do this. I'll have kind of like some rough plans in my mind. Like, you know, I want to go and see if we can get through this trail in 3 days. And this weekend, like, you want to come? And I'll just shoot out some messages. See who wants to come a week or two in advance. Sometimes just days in advance. That's why a lot of times it'll just be me and one other guy. Cause it's really hard to get people on short notice to come out as well. You know, most of my friends have full-time jobs as well. So they're not, they don't have as much free time to go out on trips with me as I have to go out. So,
right. Yeah. Have you ever invited someone to go with you and then they go on a trip with you and then you invite them again and they're like, no, thanks. Like either you scared them away or you took too long filming or anything like that. Cause I've made some people upset sometimes going, I'm like, yeah, they're going to be easy trails and they're harder trails or, you know, I'd stop too much to take video, whatever.
Not much. There's been a couple of things like, there was one time we had someone with us that I hadn't met before and they were a friend of someone else who was there. And then they got really upset that I didn't film them enough or something or like they were
ooh,
like
weird.
Felt neglected or something, or they weren't going to be like part of the, or that, I don't know, whatever it was. They got upset
weird.
And it got all dramatic. But like stuff like that, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, I'm very, because of things like that and wanting to make sure that everything goes smoothly with the trips and filming and everything, I stick to kind of my own group of people.
You have to.
Yeah. And if, I guess if you a lot of people ask me to go out with them or to take them out on trips and stuff. And my answer is usually no, just because I not because I'm trying to be a dick or anything. I tend to stick to my own group of people who I trust. And I've been burned in the past by trusting people that I shouldn't have, or letting people get kind of into my circle that shouldn't have. And I have to be very careful of that.
Man,
not to make myself sound all self-important, but
no, I can relate though. I can relate.
You know, just
you know how to test your friends. You know how to test your friends to see if they're like the ones that are for you or against you. You tell them something that they want to hear that will piss them off inside, and then see who they tell and whisper, because it'll eventually make it back. But if you could do that for one, you know, each person, you'll eventually find out who your friends are. It takes a little work, but in today's world, man. Yeah. Seems like a bunch of people are just leeches, but
yeah. So I mean, to answer your question, like that hasn't happened much, but the opposite has happened where I've had people come out and then I don't want them to come out with me again.
so just switched it a little bit. No, that's funny. I try to take the same group of guys, especially, you know, in our area, there's thousands of people that go wheeling just every weekend. And it's like, I don't know their level of experience, if they're going to freak out or panic in a water crossing or something like that, if they have any mechanical sense. And it's like, if you find kind of a good group, kind of stick with that group. It makes life a lot easier. You'll know each other's way of driving and their setup. And, you know, if they're a happy drunk or a mad drunk, you know, you never know until you go. But I think a lot of times, meeting people in these groups or forums, like, hey, I'm going camping, you know, wherever, join me. It's like, you kind of just put that out for literally anyone to come kill you, murder you, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. And I think a lot of people aren't really thinking when they say like, hey, I'm going to drive up to BC and I'm going to go out on a trip with you, you know, and I'm like, I'm not taking a random person from the internet out into the forest.
That's this, you know, excited.
It's you know, you got to kind of like be at least be a little bit cautious of that kind of thing. But I've also met a lot of really awesome people through the channel and through like group runs we've done with our Patreon group, which is great because I get to like talk to them first and kind of get to know them through our chat room there.
Do you and stuff how does that look for your Patreon? So in case anybody wants to join with the potential chance of going camping with you, do you have like the seniority or go through who's been a Patreon member longer, or you don't have to share this at all? I mean, I know a lot of people have their little
it's basically I'll just be like, hey, I'm going on this not this doesn't happen all the time, but you know, once in a while I'll be like,
sure.
You know, I'm going to go on this trip. I want to bring some of you guys with me. I'm going to bring this many, you know, reply if you meet these vehicle requirements or whatever, and you want to come, and I'll take the first, five people who reply, or, you know, something like that. Or sweet. I'll be like, as many of you who want to come, you can come. We did something like that recently, and I think we had maybe six or seven rigs.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like too crazy. But I mean, it's usually local people because, you know, I'm in Canada and I'm sure a lot of people are in the US, but I would like to do some kind of meetup down in the US when I'm down there sometime.
Yeah. Is that a plan one day if, you know, everything's going good with the channel and stuff, you just full-time travel? Is that on your radar or with the family and everything? Do you feel like that's too much right now?
that window is come and gone for me, just because my wife and daughter, my daughter's 4, she's going to be starting school. So travel with her is going to be more difficult. And my wife's, you know, not really into the idea of living full time out of a vehicle. So, you know, absolutely. If I was a single man, maybe 10-20 years younger, I probably would live out of my truck and travel full time. But no, I'm not quite okay with having a home base.
Sure. Nah, man, I get you. It's the same way. It's like buddy of ours. He's 21. He's getting married in April of this year. And I don't care what age you do to get married or anything, but I'm just like, man, he would be perfect. Him and his wife just go travel the world with no kids, take the dogs, live yeah. life at that young age, man. And then whenever you're like 30, 32, start slowing down a little bit. But I totally... Yeah,
have you seen the channel Toyota World Runners?
Yeah. Dadgummit. They're like down in South America right now or something. Yeah, I reached out to them months ago. They're living it up.
Yeah. Yeah. They're local to me here.
Really? Somewhat.
They're from BC as well. Yeah. So I've talked to them a couple of times, but they're doing it. They're out there living out of their truck, traveling yeah. around South America. It's amazing. And they're making amazing videos out of it. They're going to be huge, I think.
Yeah. Getting better and better. And that's the thing, you know, it's like, the best advice I ever got for doing anything is like, just go do it. You know, you're going to suck. You're going to hate yourself. You're going to hate the way your voice sounds. You're going to hate the way the shot came out. But over time, you know, you're going to get used to that, or you're going to and hopefully yeah. get better, you know, at your filming. If not, yeah. hopefully you got some honest friends that will stop you from buying all this thousands of dollars worth of camera gear. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to start small and kind of grow into it. I was very lucky that in 2020 when my channel really kind of blew up, it all happened kind of very quickly. It went from being very small to fairly large, 10,000 subscribers to 100,000 subscribers in 1 year, which I haven't seen anyone do since.
That is insane.
Maybe
it's like you got to pull teeth now to get people to subscribe. It is insane.
There's so many more channels out there now compared to then as well. So it's, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really good off-road and overlanding channels out there. Like the one I just mentioned, Toyota World Runners and so, you know, there's some good stuff, but there's also a lot that are just like straight up carbon copy knockoffs of what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think originality, and you see that with, you know, you're a large channel, and we're not going to be light about that. You're 300 plus subs, almost 350,000 subs, which is crazy. But
it is crazy.
If you go to like, we'll come back on that. I don't want you to, yeah, we'll come back on that. But if you look at these people with hundreds or not hundreds of thousands, but the people that have like the million plus subs, a lot of those channels, if you go through it, they're ripping each other off. And it's like, I would assume a lot of, well, not everyone, but I'm saying like the sub 100,000 YouTube channels trying to knock off the million plus subbers, kind of like what you said, and that was in like a news article or something. It's like people were ripping off their, like, verbatim, like per shot, you know, everything. It was like their script and everything.
Everyone wants,
like,
to be dang. Mr. Beast now, right?
Dude, that guy's got it figured out.
Yeah.
But he works hard. He does a lot of work. So yeah, back to you on the 350,000 in your wildest dreams, man. Probably never even thought that would happen.
I never.
Is it even surreal to you? Like, that's crazy.
It's crazy. Especially, I mean, last year was the fastest growth that I've ever seen. I think we just hit 200,000 subscribers in April last year.
Really?
And then we we ended the year with like 320 or 330. So that's like the most growth in 1 year so far, which is crazy. I thought after we hit 100,000, I mean, it did kind of slow down after that. So I kind of thought, okay, we just kind of, you know, we got to this
point
and now it's going to kind of even out. And then every year just gets crazier and crazier now. So, I mean, I hope it continues, but, you know, I always tell myself it could all go away at any second. So I just,
That's a good point too, man. That is a huge thing to consider. You know, it's like, there's a fine line. Do you keep investing in your channel and hoping that, you know, the reward will come of it, or could it all just tank tomorrow? Man, that would be gut-wrenching. Wow.
Well, there's other things too, like especially when you start like getting to these kind of higher levels, you start to think all the time about how much you have to lose, right? So then it's and how much you're dependent on Google, right? Because I get paid by Google. So you know, what if there's a war and the economy tanks and mm-hmm. advertising dollars disappear, right? Then that's right. You know, that's my whole paycheck, right? So mm-hmm. it's I mean, I guess everyone has things that affect their
I was getting ready to say it's money, but. Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't matter what you're doing, what your outlook on it. I think it's all the same. Yeah. You know, if you want to think all doom and gloom, it's going to be doom and gloom. You know, it's like, oh, I might as well just go travel the world now. I'm going to be dead one day. No, you're going to be broken on the street one day if you don't go to work. So it's like,
yeah,
people need to think and process this stuff. But I get you, man. Dude, it's been like 50 something minutes. I know we just barely scratched the surface and I was all over the place at the beginning there. I like to touch on a few little things here and there so people can kind of, if that was the question they may have had. But anyway, man, is there anything else you want to talk on? Yeah.
I'm good. But you know what? We should do this again sometime and we can, you know, talk about some other stuff.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that'd be fun. I'm in a, actually, I probably should have told you this. I'm in a transition period right now. To where I am hanging up the hat on this podcast for other personal reasons, but I've kind of been going through that, but I'm going to start a new podcast. That's going to be, I think, a lot more fun. I think it's going to be a lot more interactive for people, but I'll tell you more stuff off air, but we'll go over that.
All right,
Sean, how can people get a hold of you? And I know you're aiming for 1 million subs this year over on, so people can go subscribe. How can people go find you and follow you?
I'm on all the main social platforms, as the story till now. So, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Patreon, YouTube. I have a TikTok, but I don't really post on it very often, just cause I don't really care. But yeah, you can find me pretty much anywhere, the story till now, at the story till now.
Man, I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me. It's been fun.
All right, dude. Well, until next time, everyone, bye-bye.